Oh.
There we go.
Are we on the portal now?
Jeez.
No. We're on Secretary of State.
We're live, huh? How's everybody doing? Sorry, I'm late. Can you please call the roll, Mrs. Anarovsky? I mean, Ms. Kaffinger. Mrs.
Find some school bug.
Excused. Kind of like old live radio, isn't it?
Jack Garrison. Bob Feingold.
Present.
Excused.
Gerald Maroney.
Excused.
Sandra Ron May.
Excused.
Here.
Titus.
Here.
Ryan.
Here.
Bill Hobbs.
Here, and I'm here on behalf of Secretary Mike Cobbett.
Do we have a ruling on that?
As a matter of fact, you do.
Okay.
John Maris.
That's close to a quorum. With that, the portal authority will come to order, and we will start in the front with our audience introduction.
Dan Wenger from Systest Labs.
Lambert.
Coming. Thanks for being here. Since I wasn't here for the last meeting, I can't really tell you if the minutes are accurate, but they are open for discussion, but I haven't counted to see if we actually have a quorum. So. Seven's enough, isn't it?
You actually have six, and it is enough. Oh, wait. Well, here's an interesting question.
9, 10, 11.
Can't count me.
Can't count you? Have you been replaced?
But you can count Mr. Lokaitis as a...
Aha! Uh-huh. There was a bill about that. seem to recall that.
But my question that I would offer up, with that bill, our number becomes 13. And so that raises you to a quorum of 7. Mr. Munn, would you agree with that analysis?
Yeah, plus one.
Yeah.
And well, we can talk about the minutes.
Yeah, we
can't
talk
really approve
about
them.
Okay.
So, but we'll lay over the minutes. If you have any issues with them, we can discuss them next time when it's actually up for a vote. Rippy?
Question, since Jack Arrowsmith was unanimously voted onto the board as an ongoing member, does he count?
No.
Report?
No. Pardon? I know who you meant.
Right. Well, yeah, Jack and I look a lot alike. it's an easy mistake to make.
Yeah.
Before you go to committee reports, if I may, Mr. Chairman.
Please, continue.
You weren't here at last meeting. Director Munn brought up the question on introduction of the audience and whether it's suppression of First Amendment. Led to interesting discussion.
I missed that meeting.
Our legal counsel, Richard Westfall, who is not here today, and he apologizes, and Aaron is here taking notes for Richard. He's in court today, and he didn't think it was going to go to this afternoon, but he left me a message that it is indeed going to reconvene this afternoon, and so he won't be here. But in his analysis of what he could find, he said he believes that there's no clear answer on it, and would leave it up to the discretion of the board to do as they wish on that item. The second piece of legal advice was Secretary Kaufman's designation of Bill Hobbs as his representative onto this as a permanent designation. Richard also did some investigation into that, and there is very clear precedent and case law, and interestingly enough, involving the Secretary of State at one point and the title board at one point. And so Bill will be the permanent designee for the Secretary of State, because in our organic statute it is the office, not necessarily the person, and so it is entirely allowable to have a designee for the Secretary of State.
Voting. You'd think the bill sponsor might have included that when he ran the bill.
You would have thought.
Just for clarification.
At Dan Carton.
Yeah.
But right. I just wanted to bring up those two points before we continued. And I'm excited that Mr. Hobbs is going to be joining us, because he certainly has a lot of experience in the Secretary's office. And we met yesterday and I tried to bring him up to speed a little bit, and look forward to Bill serving with us.
We're glad to have you, and we're glad that you can vote since you're here. Could we open up the discussion on the inquiry as to the audience participation? Does that seem to be so interesting? Was there a concern of...
It's in the minutes. Just,
yeah, I know.
Well, that's left to me to talk. I just generally raised a question. It was unique in my experience as far as public bodies to have as an agenda item any member of the public to introduce. Typically, if you're going to present or speak to a public body, then you have to sign up and introduce yourself. Or if you want to come and attend, watch, listen, type of public hearing or public involvement, you're free to do so anonymously if you so choose.
Sure.
And so to have an agenda item that asks the audience to introduce themselves kind of compels people to either introduce themselves or identify themselves as somebody who doesn't want to introduce themselves or not come. And it just kind of, as I pointed out, 10 years as a First Amendment lawyer offended my sensibilities. It's not a particularly big deal, I recognize. I just raised the question.
Well, you know, our preacher announced a change in services the other day, that they were moving the announcements to the first 15 minutes, so I can guarantee you that my family will no longer hear announcements at church. So I think it originally came up as we were working on the development of the portal, and a lot of folks were representing vendors, et cetera, in the audience, so we knew that there would be resources available for us to discuss some of the issues that came up. If there's I'm certainly open to removing that as a requirement or as a part of the agenda item, or if not, they're certainly free to skip the announcements, as we say now. But it is in the bulletin. Mr. Rippey.
I think a good thing is happening today, that we're able to broadcast on the Secretary of State's site, and we'll also be recording. Thanks to the Secretary of State, you can see that this is being broadcast. Of course, there is probably zero audience for it on the broadcast. But when we were holding our meetings at LSB, a number of CIOs told me that they thought it was very helpful to them to be able to listen in and not have to attend the meeting and be able to go on with the rest of their stuff during the day. And
plus, they like the audience introduction because they know that their assignees were here.
So I think this is good, and I'd like to try and be able to keep doing that, and maybe we can get a little bit of press on it to put out there so that people know that they can listen to. I will certainly inform the CIO forum of the appropriate link to be able to listen to the meetings. So I think that'll be good. Thank you, Bill, and your folks.
That was a nice segue, but back to the issue of the audience introduction.
Well, there was really a reason that I said that, and I tossed you a softball, and you missed. But
well, we are looking for a new executive director, so maybe I'm about to hit a home run.
Point taken. The idea of being able to participate or to be able to hear what's going on without actually having to introduce, you do have the option, if you have access to the internet, to be able to listen to the proceedings. That was the segue.
Thank you. Am I the only one it was lost on?
Probably.
Okay. Well, if there's no action item or motion.
We can't take a vote. So
yeah, good point. Yeah, excellent. Glad I brought my attorney today. Where were you Thursday when I needed you last week? Let's move to committee reports. Bob Feingold, Business Committee, and Savai, Business Portal.
Chairman.
Can you bring this a little closer, though, so we can get you.
A portion of the Business Committee met last month specifically to talk about an initiative which I had proposed at the last meeting be considered that of a business portal. And just to keep it this report quick, we did bounce the subject around and came to a consensus that there might be some value in pursuing a business portal as a part of Colorado.gov, but that it really requires a full-blown feasibility study to really establish if it's viable or not as a capability that could support itself. And to just kick that off, the executive director agreed to work with the integration contractor on determining what is being done in other states, what we are doing now, and a few other subtasks which Mr. Rippey and the general manager will go into in their part of the discussion. So that's basically what happened at the Business Committee meeting that went on last month, and the rest of the discussion of the sub-element of item 2A will probably be covered by the two other gentlemen I mentioned. Thank you.
Any questions of Bob? And we can always come back to him if there is something that comes up. Mr. Rippey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As we met in the Business Committee, the action items that we wanted to bring forward today for the director was to talk about the concept of business portal and say, as Bob said, where we are, what are other states doing, and really a critical question is how does that fit in our self-funded model and the resource requirement that we may be imposing upon our integrator, and in what case, what might be the slide impact on other projects that are in the queue currently. And we looked at the feasibility study being a six-month process, first meeting in January, report back with feasibility of doing a really integrated business portal. As we went out and looked at what is currently being done by various agencies and Secretary of State, there is a lot of business activity that is being conducted online. The concept of a business portal would be bring it all in one place so that someone that was wanting to bring a business from inception to an operating business could go to this state website, and it would be an interactive process. That's one option at the very highest. It would be an interactive process that first the question may be, do you have a tax ID number? You say no, boom, it takes you to the appropriate place within the Department of Revenue. Do you have a legal status as a corporation, partnership, LLC? No, boom, takes you to the Secretary of State. And so when you're all done with this, you have, at least on the state level, everything that you need to become an operating business. As we look in other states, they have links to SBA, they have links to other local jurisdictions that they may need to. And so what Dan and his group had gone out, and you have this in your packet here, and this is just kind of a compilation of 31 other states and how what they're doing for businesses. And as you can see, there's 12 states that have a one-stop portal service in the portal format. And if you look at the second page, it'll tell you about some of the types of activities that are in that. So this gives you a good feel of what's happening in other states. And one of the things Jack Arrowsmith was going to report back to us was talking to his business development people in Douglas County, what they thought the value would be to businesses. Clearly, that would be part of the feasibility study. The feasibility study, when it's done, would say, this is what we think would be a reasonable approach for the state of Colorado business portal. This is what it would include. The participants in this study to get it going would be at least four core agencies that have the bulk of the business activity within their agency. And this is one of those, don't be fooled that this is going to take a long time and it's going to take a lot of resources. But I believe that it would be truly an integrated business portal that would start, Mr. Lokaitis, on the enterprise approach of bringing our agencies together to deliver services to the constituency. You want to pick up anything else that I lost on this?
No, I think you've hit the nail on the head. The criteria that you see on the second page are those that I'm personally familiar with that are operating in other portals, not only within NIC, but around the country. And we simply carved up the 30 states across our team and went out and did a lot of navigating around those websites. That's what you've got right here. And I think Greg Rippey did a job of summarizing the opportunity that's ahead of us. Real question, and I do agree, is how much resource to do the feasibility study, which seems like the logical next step, and where we're going from here.
Are you seeing on some of these the ability to get at least one component of these business requirements on the portal so that, say, the Secretary of State's requirements, as they're moving to go web, are they able to kind of take care of all of those requirements, even though you might have to go to DORA or some other licensure, maybe streamlining at least a component?
Well, I think various agencies have done a good job of doing that. You know, as if you look at the most expansive portal that you could do, you're going to, depending, say right now you're wanting to start up and you want to do a child care, and there's a requirement to have a license for child care. Well, Health and Human Services currently doesn't have an online application to be a licensed child care. We're working on that. We actually do have a task order for that. But the point is, you're going to hit places that people will go to that there is no online service. And so it's an evolution of what this is going to be as agencies, whatever they do, whether it's licensing, whether it's registration, whether it's reporting, we can tell them they have to do this, and it may be just call this number to do that. So it's an evolution of the agencies getting their business processes online and our ability to bring them together when they are available, because they're not going to, you're not going to be able to do everything online because some of the requirements aren't available online permanently, presently, but a lot of them are. Secretary of State's done a lot. Department of Reg Agencies has done a lot. There's a lot what revenue has. But what we're trying to look at is what is going to be the resources required within agencies, what is their desire to do this, and one of the things that we do know, and Bob brought this up, the first question that ought to be asked of every director is, what would stop you from doing this? And really, if you even have one of the major agencies that has a reason that they can't, don't want to, won't do this, it's probably a killer for the concept of the portal. But, and I thought that was an excellent question, what would stop you from doing this? And so what I am requesting, and the business committee is requesting, is direction from this board. Would you like us to go forward with this feasibility study? I have talked with Ben Nivert of Trudeau of helping us convene this feasibility study group and to move it forward in a logical manner, keep us on task, and come back with a report the first month of 08 for this board to consider. Whatever our report may say, this is the most logical, the most doable business portal that we could bring forward to you. Talking with Dan Morrison at CI, they would probably staff half a project manager to this feasibility study, so that gives you an idea of what the resource requirement would be, and we're pretty much at capacity right now with the projects, and Dan will get into and tell you in his general manager's update, but we're pretty close to capacity, and so some things are going to slow down by taking a half a project manager to do this. Yeah, you need to know that.
Dan?
I just want to make sure the board understands the concept of the business one-stop portal is not to rewrite the existing online applications that the agencies have that offer services to businesses, to build an intelligent wizard-like interface to help the public decide which forms need to be filed and which documents need to be completed and turned in, then interface them to those existing applications. So we're not talking about doing away with or in any way rewriting the Secretary of State's fine applications that help businesses file online. We're building a wizard to help those that don't know what they need to file decide what they need to file. Or is the same way, professional licensing and those.
Bob Fengel.
I'd also like to add that a feasibility study, one that's required by the state for any project that is undertaken, will, as a matter of high importance, identify the revenues, identify the costs, identify the benefits, and identify the issues that not only the portal's going to have, but that the agencies might encounter. So it'll lay everything out there in one place and give us, the board, all the information that we need to make a decision. At the same time, by engaging the various agencies on this during the feasibility study, you'll either be able to see where the buy-in is or isn't. And that's a decision factor as well.
Further discussion? Are you going to put together an outline of a proposal of what this would take and the resources that are going to be required? And
the resources for the authority are what we would engage with Trudeau. The cost is well within our self-funded model to be able to do that. I think the question for the direction I would request from this board is, want to get started on it, because if we're going to have a delivery date of January, I believe it's going to take every bit of 6 months to do all the steps The business committee has outlined the steps, and we think we have a good handle on what it would take if you say go. And I don't believe that it takes a formal vote for us to do this, since we're one short. But
good thing then, huh?
And I believe that Bob has talked to most of the members offline about the concept of this. Jack Arrowsmith has been heavily involved in it and participated in the business committee meeting. One of the things that Jack asked in an email just 2 days ago is there an ability for Dan to have a demo? Is there a demo available of the Hawaii portal? One of the things Dan did as GM in Hawaii was create and launch a business portal. He's done it before. He has a good understanding of what it takes to do this. But I think the feasibility study is very important so that this board knows exactly what it would take.
Hey, Dan, how was the utilization rates on that once it got up and going? And
the uptake on it was phenomenal in Hawaii. And again, the goal there was to build a public-facing interface that helped them make the decision of which forms to file. Then the back end of that wizard sends the data sets directly into the agency's database. Then it integrates with their existing workflow processes back end. It's not our goal to change the workflow processes inside the agency. So I can say that at the present time, using that wizard interface, 60% of all the companies registered in the state of Hawaii register online. 60% adoption are in year three.
Mike?
Dan, I was wondering, is there the opportunity for reusability of any of the work that's been done with NIC in other states? Should we move ahead with developing this for Colorado?
My instinct tells me that the things that are reusable are the models, not the database structures. Every state's got its own uniquenesses.
Right.
I would offer, though, to the business committee and anybody else, the opportunity to actually demo the Hawaii system. We can go through and form a couple of companies and see how that process works and maybe consider using that.
And I would add, having the opportunity, excuse me, my voice is really bad today, working with businesses both in Broomfield at the city and county level, because of the complexity we have in Colorado with business registration at all the multiple levels, especially in the taxation area, they have an extreme desire to have a single place to go to find out where they need to go and what they need to do. And I think the adoption rate of something like this would be very high in Colorado, primarily because of our local collection.
That's why I was asking the component issue. If there's a point when you get to this guy and he says, oh, you needed to do X, Y, Z first, and you could have done it all in our portal before you got here, et cetera, I hope that would be something that would resolve those kinds of issues from this feasibility study, at least let us see where the answers are. Further discussion? Is there any?
You said something about dedicating a half of a project manager and that things would slow down. Putting on my other hat as a client, I am concerned about anything that would slow work down. This is your chance to talk me through that. That was a softball.
Yeah, but it's curving.
It's really windy today.
At your head.
Good question.
You know, I think that's a very, my approach is to be eyes open, and when I say it slows down, it slows down from what we could be at max. We continually are getting project requests, which is good. That's what the business that we're in at. CI continually adds new people to their staff. We are at about 20 employees over at CI, where our business model had us at the first of the year at 14. So it's a relative slowdown. It's just understanding that resources are going to be dedicated to it. I don't think that we have any projects currently that we're saying, oh, we can't even get started on it till, and correct me if I'm wrong, or John or Dan, we're not in that modality at this point. And when we talk about a half a project manager, that's not going to be the way business is going to be done if we say, okay, let's start working on this. We won't be telling anybody, gee, we can't do your project for a year. So
Dan, please.
Just to elaborate, we don't have a half of a vacant project manager sitting in the office waiting for our project to work on. There will have to be some reprioritization of if we undertake this feasibility study, and if it does take a half of a project manager 20 hours a week, which as the study ramps up, it's not unlikely that it will take that level of effort. We'll need to find the resources to have the person available.
And Evan, I think it's a little bit of strategic thinking, and I'm actually going to talk some more about strategic thinking later in this meeting. But it's a conversation that needs to be held about this will identify certain revenue streams and it will diversify revenue streams for the support of the portal. Long-term looking at it, it's a vital component of that revenue stream, which is going to allow us as we mature to be able to do more projects and have more things. I think it's an investment in the viability of the portal.
I
don't want to presuppose what the feasibility study is going to say either. It may say we're not at a place that we can do it in Colorado.
Yeah. It might. You're right, and I appreciate your comments. As a client, again, and you know, I am all over John Thomas all the time about, you know, where's my product.
Good.
When you say slow down, that just raises red flags for me. And I understand the advantages and the benefits of being able to move forward with something like this. But as selfishly speaking, that was my question.
John.
If I might. Your projects. those are not going to be slowed down. Ability to work at full capacity, projects are knocked off. We have to allocate somebody as a project. That person can't go out and pull the next one in the queue. That person has to go out and say that I don't know that you need to be worried about your projects, although I know you do.
So, but I'm also worried for everybody else you service.
Right.
Or that you're about to service.
Projects are knocked out of our current project list, the things that we are at. That person or whoever is actually working on those is going to have to probably be the person. That just means that person can't pick up the next one. That would be my argument. Once you're softball.
Right. Which is okay, unless that next project in the queue is mine.
I'm sorry, Mrs. Craig. How long would such a study?
I'm proposing delivery of the study in January 2008.
Yeah, I think it's probably within your authority of the executive director to direct resources into something like this. You're right, without a vote. But I also think that it becomes a part of the direction that we take, which I would hope is beneficial. But I certainly feel more comfortable as a board with a quorum here that said, yeah, this is good, because I wouldn't want to hear back from a quorum that voted in a majority to stop something that we started. Is my concern, and if it's at the next meeting, which I know is going to be an issue, which is on the table to discuss because it's July, right after the 4th of July, and we push back that date 1 month to address those issues, then so be it. But that's
I
Bob, please.
May I suggest that if a
vote is absolutely needed, that it be done electronically and the results of that vote posted on the website, so as not to lose another month. Voted down, then it's a moot point.
Greg?
I understand exactly what you're saying, and maybe I could, and I never think that you should rush for the sake of a month and not get exactly the clarity that you need. And maybe if we could do a demo at the next meeting, make sure we have connectivity here and be able to just do it and schedule that.
Well, I think Evans brought up the most valid concern to me on what other folks in our client's position are going to feel when they say, gosh, wait a minute, I'm being told now, you know, soon, not now, but they're spending resources doing X, Y, Z. I thought they were here for me. Sure, it might be beneficial to us and to them later, but I would hate if that reverberates into our client community without knowing the board says is fully backing it. The other thing on the other side, we could say, yeah, we're doing this. Send out an email saying if you don't like it, let us know and we'll pull the plug. But that's a kind of a backdoor approach to taking a vote. Dan.
I suggest that in addition to the demo at the next meeting, we also bring you some more solid assessment of the resource requirements that you think will be needed and possible impact on the project.
I think that'd be great. And I think if we went ahead with this, whatever the result is going to be great for the long-term health of this organization. And if it is postponed a month, that's not a big deal and something that we hope lasts a really long time. Bob?
Is it feasible for this that if you have a PM halftime for 6 months, that if you contract it out, if it's within our financial resources to do so, contract the feasibility study out to a competent firm to do it full-time in a shorter period of time, that it would get the job done sooner, it would have less impact on any of our customer base, and get us to a point where a decision could be made.
My concern on that, and I guess I can't give you a hard answer to that, but my concern is there's so much gathering that has to be done and discussion with agencies that I think working twice as fast doesn't make it more doable because it's that convening of and the we all know how difficult it is to schedule. And that's my guess.
And if I may, you're also going to want a portal project manager at those meetings anyway.
Right.
So we will bring back a more solid proposal, a demo. And in the interim, I'm still going to be doing some of the groundwork with agencies. That's not work that costs us anything more, and I think it's good groundwork to be able to do it.
Well, no, we certainly can't have a motion and a vote, and I don't. But I'd be very interested to see if there's anybody that would object to the goal of this, and hopefully we can get past this. The issue and include the rest of the board members for making a decision. But I'm really supportive. I think it's a great idea, and I think we should do it, and I think it'll serve us well. I just don't want my concerns to be construed as opposition, which they are not.
No, and, you know, if we can think of not just Evan as our client, but the citizens of Colorado. But I think it takes a strategic look at it, going, is this what you want your portal to be?
Yeah.
Is this the way that we want to go? So we will bring you back some stuff.
Great. Finance Committee. Thanks, Dan, by the way. Thank you.
You had the P&L and balance sheet before you that was submitted. It's kind of just the same stuff. We show a good positive net income. What you will see for the May, and we'll talk about this in a little bit, we will start seeing IVMV numbers increase from where they are now. I was really happy that legal fees for April were less. As you look on the March, they dropped from 33 to 1500. The higher number was a lot of time we were spending on Jefferson County EGE is where those legal fees were. Everything else is just kind of the same monthly numbers. As you see on the balance sheet, as we're looking at total equity being at that 437 number, as you will recall, we've talked about trying to keep that number right around 450 and other activities that we may engage in that are beneficial to the portal to keep that number right about there. Next month, you will have before you, since we are now on a state fiscal year, a budget for fiscal year 07-08, which will be for your approval of the budget, discussion and approval. That's about it on finance.
Oh, questions?
Wait, let me back up just a little bit. I am scheduled July 3rd to meet with Clifton Gunderson to talk about our audit, what's going to be audited, what format. And the other thing that I've asked them as part of this audit, we're going to discuss flow of funds and if they are the appropriate flow of funds. We have a shared account with CI. We also have a SEPA account. And if the way that we're handling those flow of funds is the most appropriate way and the easiest to maintain a clear audit trail for those. That's it on finance.
Any questions? All right. Update time.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One of the things I alluded to was an increase in what you see as IVMV. And what we have begun doing, and Mr. Munn, thank you for some of your questioning on your first meeting, because that's the benefit of having new members cycle in and out, is fresh eyes, taking a different look in, and asking some questions that maybe we didn't hear before.
My ignorance is my strength.
Please introduce yourself.
And so as I went back to the old risk matrix that we had and reassessed where we were in the whole risk cycle of this portal, I came to the conclusion that, one, we do need some eyes that are not ours looking at things, and two, probably the biggest risk we have in putting out applications is that we haven't pre-launch or load tested. And so SysTest is doing a bunch of bad language. We're doing significant testing on applications and load testing. And I've asked Dan Winger to present to you today a summary of the test operations that we are doing on Colorado.gov as a member of SysTest and what we're doing. So Dan, if you'd join us up here, because we do have microphones that theoretically, if anybody was listening on the internet.
There. Thank you, Greg. Thank you,
Dan,
Mr. Chairman.
Please.
I think Kathy has passed out a one-page summary that quickly addresses the efforts that we have ongoing in the test arena, but I'll step through some of the highlights here with you and provide any clarification, I guess, that you might be looking for. We signed the task order number 7, with Greg back in April, and started meeting with Greg and Dan Morrison, Mark Church, John Thomas in May to lay out the plan for what we thought the right approach would be to incorporate the testing. It was agreed that we'd look at it from two specific approaches as a first effort. It's kind of the task order itself is kind of an omnibus task order that allows many different types of testing to occur, but our initial thrust, I guess, will be to perform user acceptance testing for some of the new releases that are upcoming, and also to perform load testing on releases that have already gone live. The objectives that we've identified there, of course, the primary objective is to provide a collaborative test and qualification or QA support effort that provides a high-quality product for you. Some of the opportunities for load testing are to verify that the system sizing is adequate to handle the projected traffic, and we've kind of identified a target level for this first run of load tests of trying to attain 1,000 simultaneous users. We'll also be looking to monitoring response times. Some of the first phase of each of the load tests will be to perform a ramp-up sequence of virtual users so that we can identify particular levels where we begin to see stress on the system, performance parameters begin to degrade, and if necessary, we can, you know, call it in to the testing sequence and give CI an opportunity to go back and tweak the system and do some system tuning. The second phase of the load testing will be to provide some system stability testing under a reasonable load over an extended period of time. We've targeted 12 hours to see what kind of response the system has and identify if there's any memory leaks and that sort of thing. So where we are today in the user acceptance test arena, we've started looking at two applications. The first one that we looked at was the driver monitoring application that's currently fairly early in its development. But we put together a test plan and reviewed that with CI, identified the approach that we intend to take. We will be coming on at the last 2 weeks of that release effort, just prior to it going live, so that we can perform the user acceptance test kind of function. Prior to that, CI and the Department of Revenue will go through their system level testing to verify that all the specification requirements are met. So that testing is probably a month or so downstream yet. As we were meeting with Dan...
Excuse me one second.
Sure.
Rico Munn.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Let me again rely on my strength of my ignorance, but explain to me what user acceptance test
is. User acceptance test is to verify, or I guess validate really, that the application meets the intent of the defined users of the system. So we'd be representing the public coming in across the internet, going through the same,
and how many people it can handle at a time?
That's load testing.
That's the load testing piece of it. But from a functional perspective, user acceptance testing is representing the public to make sure that we can use it and get the responses that we're looking for.
Have we had any complaints, Mr. Chairman?
Oh, please, Evan.
Have we had any complaints about load issues? Have there been any issues?
As I reported last time, I thought maybe two meetings ago, when the unclaimed property application was mentioned on TV by the state treasurer, and she held up a silver ingot and said, if you'd like to have one of these, go online at Colorado.gov. We had about 30,000 users, and we did see some degradation of response times and some timeouts. So that's a real-time load test that you really don't want to have one of those cold. So we're very excited about having the SysTest group collaborate with us on some more rigorous test protocols before we go live with these.
And one of the things we haven't arrived at, as we continue to bring on applications, how often do we need to load test as we bring these on? Because we're going to continue to have more and more demand on the system. And that's something we're all going to have to discuss and say, okay, what do we think are our triggers that we should go and redo some load testing? We don't have that I don't have that answer yet. But, and before Dan continues, I'd like to just say that I'm very pleased with the collaborative manner in which this is happening. This is not just a check to see if they can break it. It's their expertise and experience and helping us make every application that we put out there a better application. I think it's very positive for the portal.
Okay. Please. Thank you. The second application that we're looking at from the user acceptance test perspective is an application that Dan just identified to us this past week, the measurement standards licensing application, which they're in their final phase of system level testing. And we're going to begin our UAT look at it beginning next Monday. Okay, from the load testing arena, we ran a proof of concept demonstration with the on-claim property application about a month ago to verify that it was compatible with the tool that we typically like to use for our internal applications. We put together a test plan and reviewed that with CI and identified 8 user scenarios that we'd like to write test scripts for that hit the 3 functional areas of the test site. We completed those test scripts and had a meeting with Mark Church this morning to review how the tool was running, how the scripts were operating, and agreed that we're going to run that first load test next week. So right now we're attempting to schedule the appropriate time next week when we can, and we're testing everything on the test site. We're not using the production site, but the test site is identical to the production site, so we expect to get, you know, realistic answers to what response times and performance would be. So we'll be doing our first load test next week. We've also identified 6 other applications that will follow sequentially when we're complete with the on-claim property that are listed on this page. So the next one that we'll be working on is the online vehicle registration renewal application. And as we run one set of load tests, provide the results back to CI, that will allow them to, again, tweak the system somewhat. So that will give us a little bit of time to start working on the next set of test scripts so that we can run these as quickly as possible over the next several months.
Comments? Dan, please.
If I could ask, just what kind of consequences flow from especially load testing? I mean, problems, does that lead to?
Load balancers would be one of the first things that you would look for. The interface with the database, you know, is another problem area. So, you know, additional servers, load balancers, you know, the typical hardware kinds of responses. And there's also, you know, some programming things that sure. they can do.
Speak up just a little bit into that microphone, please. I'm sorry, I'm not hearing you either. Dan?
Just to elaborate on Dan's answer, the test results will allow us to pinpoint any one of a number of potential points of failure in the channel through which these transactions take place, from the web to our web server, from the web server to the app server to the database server, and sometimes back to a department server that's not something that we have control over. So the value that Dan's group brings to us is tremendous, because it allows us to methodically analyze where that point of failure is or where the multiple points of failure are, whether it's load balancers or additional server capacity or a bigger pipe in terms of bandwidth. That's the value that this testing regimen brings.
Thanks.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Dan. Okay, as I continue, I would like to take notice of SysTest contract expires March of 2008. In our contract, we have 2 renewable terms at our option. I'd like the board members to be aware of that, be thinking about it, and if they have any comments, because we will probably late this year or next year have an action item on it, but any feedback that you can give me would be appreciated. That's just a heads up on that one. It's been requested of me to consider a retreat for the board, and I've given some thought, and I would propose the following. It was suggested last month that a half-day retreat would be best. My thought is, and I throw this out for discussion, is a half-day retreat, the same day that we have a board meeting. I'm proposing in October. It would be off-site from this. We would have a meeting and then lunch and then come back here for the regular board meeting. What I think would be helpful to present to the board at that time is pull out our business plan, take a look at it, and be talking about these strategic planning, because that business plan is really the document that drives how we're moving forward as we look at projects, what we're doing, how we score projects, and really what are some of the core functionality that we expect within our portal. The second valuable process that I think could occur during that half-day meeting is a couple of presentations, and maybe very much focused on security, to be able to get our state CSIO, Mr. Weatherford, to present to the board what's the state of security in IT across the state of Colorado. I've asked Dan to consider maybe their security analyst, a company called CyberTrust, to be able to give us a presentation. I throw those out as a date, a type of meeting, and ask for comments back on whether. When is the October meeting? It would be the first Thursday. My thought on having it the same day as we have the board is not ruin 2 days.
That's a good idea.
And we can change that date, Rico. I was picking October because nobody's going to be gone on vacation in the summer. Probably have already got all your budgets into JVC.
When and approved. Let's segue a little bit as before we nail this down to the NIC Partners Conference. When is the date of that? And are you going
to
share
the 25th
of October?
Yeah.
Because since we hadn't done the retreat yet, and I know hopefully we're going to encourage some members to go to that, and we need to talk about that as well. It seems to me it might be great to have the retreat
point.
After that conference, because that's definitely one of the catalysts for the ideas.
Yeah.
And if we work on this feasibility study, that's going to start working into this business plan and strategic plan management and revision component as well. So I would like to, it might work better to have some of those tied together.
Yeah.
And that's the 23rd of October?
23rd through the 25th, I believe.
Where is it?
Portland.
Have we had any discussion on that at the last meeting?
Briefly.
We did,
and the board requested that we research what a cost would be for a member, and it's approximately $1,000.
Per member?
I think that's great to have it subsequent to that meeting.
If not possible, that's okay too, but did you give much of an explanation on the partners conference to the board? And
there was some discussion about it, to Greg Buckwin and his comments, and supportive of the value of that, and I think you each got an email yesterday from Kathy inviting you to log into the partners portal that we have, which allows you to download all of the project ideas that have been presented at previous conferences.
Mike.
Are you proposing November 1 for the retreat?
Is that the first Thursday?
But I guess that would be then. That would be the week after.
Say that would or wouldn't be?
Would
not.
Would not be what?
Ugly.
Ugly?
He's saying it'd be fine.
Speaking through his attorney. Well, is there an interest of members to go to the partners conference? I highly recommend it, and we haven't talked about who or how many or what, but it's really, when you get to talk to everybody that's doing this in other states, probably the biggest burden is our partner here, because you come back with the laundry list of, can you get this done Thursday? And then on Friday, go back to what we talked about on Wednesday. I mean, it's really...
And don't slow down any project.
Right, don't slow down any project. It's and you get a chance to share what you're going through, and hope we find a lot of common issues that other people face. Last year it was here, which was fortunate for us as far as travel issues, but very well attended, and it's certainly worth your time, and I know that's probably the hardest thing to come by is the time to get there.
So I'll try and put something together, and we've got enough time, but I guess my question on format, having it the same day as a board meeting, is that desirable, or would you like a separate day? The other question is that kind of a rough outline of something that would be valuable to the board members?
That's a yes for me.
We have two yeses. Anyone else? Rico?
And we can certainly adjust as we get closer if there's other things we want to discuss. Okay. One of the things the board had asked that we had said last month that we would do is look at other NIC states and start doing a gathering of applications that might be of interest to agencies and executive directors. That's quite an undertaking. There are currently in the knowledge library of NIC about 2,200 applications that are out there. We're going to continue doing that. And as executive directors, I would like to be able to come back to you and say, you know, these are the types of applications that might be of interest that are already being done in other NIC states that may have easy applicability to do a similar project in Colorado. And so Dan has agreed. I couldn't find on the partner portal, without going to each separate website, what the online services were. But we will continue on that. The Jefferson County EGE has been signed by us. We have still not received it back, and it is going through some legal challenges, not challenges, channels at Jefferson County, and we should probably expect that back next week. Oh, yeah, and there you do have in your packet, the board has asked previously, who do we have EGEs with? And so now you have a list of the everyone that we do have EGEs with. And that's it, Mr. Chairman.
Great, thank you. Are there any questions of the executive director and his update? Thank you. Mr. Morrison.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, you have the general manager's report in your packet. I will not read this to you. You'll sure thank me for that. I've continued to make some modifications to the format to make it easier and more, I guess you'd say, intuitive for your use. And I'll lead you through the changes that I've made, some of them in response to previous requests. So let me just hit the high points, and if you have any questions, please stop me and ask them. We had a very solid month in May. We did deliver a couple of new websites to the CMS, and we spent some time working with SysTest, as Dan Winger reported to you, to get our testing protocols in place, something we're very excited about. That resource is, if we didn't have it from SysTest, we would have to staff it internally, and we really appreciate SIPA making the resource available to us. We did submit. We actually nominated ourselves for an award at the CSIA, Colorado Technology Association meeting, which just happened this Tuesday night. Unfortunately, we did not win. We had two applications we submitted. In spite of the fact that Senator May is on the voting committee, I'm going to assume since he, I'm sorry he's not here, so I can ask him if he voted for us. But This is all of the leading software companies in Colorado participate in this association. So we were in very, very good company there at the award ceremony, and I'm glad we submitted, and maybe next year we'll win something. Project highlights, the treasurer scheduling request. This is a similar application to the ones we've done previously for the governor, the lieutenant governor. That has been launched. Online vehicle registrations continues to be the star performer of online applications for us. We've now done about 25,000 vehicle registrations online and brought in about $3.6 million to the Department of Revenue.
I did my boat trailer 2 days ago online, by the way, and it was wonderful.
Do you have your emissions certificate?
The trailer does not emit.
We appreciate your support, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah. Let's see, $3.75 for gas, or what was it, $1.75? It was only 75 cents.
So
it wasn't, yeah.
Thank you very much. The content management system, you know, that's a huge resource commitment for the portal. We have about 3 full-time equivalent staff that support that, and it's continuing to get traction, and we're building our user base there and continuing to do training on a more or less continuous basis. Marketing, Jill Janicki, our marketing executive, is always active and really helps us get the word out. She led our award nomination write-ups for this recent spate of awards, and she's helping us submit some of our applications to national awards that are coming up. This is award season in the portal business, so we're busy writing award submissions. Our staff also, along with Greg Rippey and Kathy, attended the SEMA conference up in Breckenridge a few weeks back, and we're glad to have been a part of that forum where the state's IT team gather once or twice a year to talk about strategic issues. We like to be considered a part of that group, and we're hopeful that next year we'll also be able to be on the agenda, and I think we will be. Also, in terms of marketing, you have in front of you the new Colorado SIPA sticky notes, which we're distributing far and wide, and if you would like a supply of those, just let us know and we'll bring some over to you.
So this is my version.
That's right.
Mine too, Rico.
Damn. Your palm pilot.
That's good. That was good.
Turning to page 5, this is a display that I kind of initiated, I guess you'd say, 4 months ago, and we continue to refine it in response to board members' input. This is a snapshot of our project queue, and the blue bars represent the time frames that we anticipate now for those projects that are in active requirements gathering, spec writing, development, or testing. There's a number below that you see from number 21 on down that don't have color bars, and that's because they are in discussion. There's a new column here this month, the status column in this graphic, and that column represents the stage of the software development life cycle that the project's in, and this is in response to Bob Feingold's request that we give some indicator of where these projects are in the pipeline. And this was the most meaningful way for us to give you an indication of where they are. And if, unfortunately, it's on the next page, but the legend for those codes is on the top of page 6. But I'll tell you what they are. Projects in the discussion phase are projects that we do not have a signed project request for. These are meetings that we've had, discussions that we've had, project ideas that have been mentioned to us, and so we're pursuing those. There's no paperwork done yet. But there's significant enough discussions that we think you ought to be aware of the direction that we're going with those. The next category, the RGs, are in requirements gathering. That means we've got a signed work order. We're in the process of actually gathering the data we need to write the spec. So we're in active meetings. The next category is the S category, or specification category. We're documenting the application, determining how it's going to work, writing the requirements in such a way that the developers can develop those. The next is the D category, or those in active development. We've got programmers working on it. We've got a prototype, and we're heading towards a test phase, which would be the T phase. So we're in testing for those apps, and finally you're in the launch And some of those at the top three, LNT, those are projects that are ongoing because we've got some of the components launched and we're testing other components. For example, CMS is an ongoing endeavor. We've got a number of launched websites and we've got others that are in some stage of development or testing. Same for OVR. We've got 9 counties now and we hope to have 64 in the near future. So those are ongoing efforts.
And this replaces the old Tier 1, Tier 2, Tier 3.
That's right. And if you look back on page 12, we've actually taken the old queue, the Tier 1, Tier 2, Tier 3 queue, and we've turned it into, it's the same list of projects, but we've coded them in the same way we coded the list. And we've given you a color scheme that will tell you if it's green, it's on track. If it's white, it's awaiting resources. And if it's yellow, it's on hold. It's the same project queue we've always had, just recoded to be more consistent with the industry standard lifecycle categories. Hopefully you'll find this a more intuitive and easy to use format than the previous one. Any questions about that? There was one I wanted to bring your attention to. If you look on the color bars, project number 13 on the list. We've also started numbering the projects so you can keep them apart, so we can keep them apart. The stolen vehicle check is one that we found out about in the month of May that was a bill passed by the legislature that requires recyclers of vehicles to check the VIN number of the vehicle against the state's motor vehicle database. We didn't know that bill was out there, and we got a call from DPS, Department of Public Safety, about 2 weeks ago saying, how soon can you guys build this for us? Could you do it by July 1? Well, probably not. But we can have the requirements pretty well in place. It's not a complicated application, and our working title for it is Rec Check, so that the recyclers and the tow operators and the car dealers can go online and check this. The legislature did, in its infinite wisdom, provide the latitude for the department to assess a fee to those operators for conducting that check. And so we're in the process now with the department of determining what will the app do, can we provide enough administrative back end to make it reasonable for us to charge a fee for those operators, those commercial operators. And they're very receptive to that at the department. The legislature also requires that the general public be given access to this utility. And we recommended to the DPS that that should be a free utility for the public, that if you're going to buy a motor vehicle out of the newspaper or from your next-door neighbor or from the guy across the street, you have the ability to check the VIN number of that vehicle and get back the status, has it been reported stolen or not, and that would be a free service for the public.
Just a curiosity, is that against the national database or a state database?
State of Colorado. The fiscal note on that bill says that 300,000 vehicles a year are recycled in the state of Colorado. And of those, 25,000 are stolen. So the potential user base is quite high, especially since the legislation mandates that the operators use the service. So we're going to have 100% adoption out of the chute on this app.
Did they authorize the amount that the fee could be? Because it strikes me interesting that they're going to make it free to the public and make these guys pay.
Well, that was our
suggestion.
Why would
I pay?
The department's looking to us to help them determine the fee.
Greg Rippey.
You know, this brings up an interesting problem that happens in the legislative session. If you read the bill, and I didn't know the bill was out there, but it says that the effective date is July 1. It still has to be signed by the governor, and it was one of the last bills that was signed by the governor as it went through there. And it has all these requirements on recyclers, and the portal component of it is just a part. They have to keep records, they have to show their logs, and they have to do a number of things. But you end up with a piece of legislation that has all these requirements and really no time to be able to build the application between when the governor signs it and the effective date. I bring that up
to Representative Cadman that that's maybe something, as you look at bills in the future, that ought to have a little bit more scrutiny, because you make a position that you can't comply with.
It wasn't my bill. Dan Morrison.
Anyway, we're very excited about this app, because I think we can build a service so that there's enough value there for the operators that they won't mind paying a nominal couple of bucks for a check. And if we can build a component that allows the public to check these VIN numbers at no cost, that's a great public service, and the fee we collect allows us to maintain the whole app.
Car that's stolen that comes from out of state.
Good question. So,
the state of Colorado doesn't care about a car that comes from out of state. They only have control and responsibility over vehicles. You know, if somebody wants to, can't imagine that you're going to be shipping a bunch of wrecked cars around the country. Probably not a lot of money in shipping wrecked cars.
There's some issues with the salvage title, which you probably recall from your time.
That's a great start. Some of their issue on salvage title.
Well, wait till other states start doing the same thing, and then you can unite the access. Yeah, that's good stuff.
So we're excited about that one. Last part of page six, you can see this is the summary table. This is also a new feature of the report that allows you at a glance to see how busy we are. We have a total of 20 apps or websites in some phase of active spec writing or development or testing. We have another 8 that are in requirements gathering and 12 projects that are in some form or fashion in the pipeline being discussed that we expect work orders for in the next near future. Continuing on page 7, portal metrics. A lot of this is a lot of detail, and I won't lead you through all of the detail. The top chart is online vehicle registration renewals. There's the 25,000 vehicles. These line items tell you how many vehicles, how many dollars, and whether they were paid for by an e-check or a credit card. The summary stats tell us that 79% of the vehicles were renewed by credit card, 21% by electronic check. Table 2, LiveHelp. LiveHelp has gone from 600 accesses in January to about 1,400 last month. So we've doubled our LiveHelp usage in the 5 months. That's
as a result of Senator May.
That's right.
He must be traveling.
if I can, I got to tell you this story on Senator May. He calls me up one day, Ken. He says, LiveHelp's gone. It's gone. So I immediately panic and call John Thomas. He goes, well, it was going this morning. Well, if you look on Colorado.gov, we put a bunch of new applications, and they up there as new for a while. It went away from being up there and listed as new. There was still the icon for LiveHelp, but the senator didn't. He says, well, I tell everybody it's the third one on the homepage. LiveHelp is now back.
The third one on the whole. Thanks, Greg. We appreciate that.
Well, that's because he goes around and tells everybody, it's the coolest thing. You got to use LiveHelp. Go to the third one down on the homepage.
I need to ask the staff how many people that use LiveHelp reference Senator May, or how many of them are Senator May.
There's a good
one. One was me today. So.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Were we
very
appropriate?
Good. Yeah.
Good.
Gave me the answer in about 5 minutes.
That's terrific. page 8, again, a graphical snapshot of the usage of the portal from a page view perspective. The bar graph on top shows a pretty steady pattern. A little bit of an uptick in the last, in 07. I got to think that's because of all of the new online services we've offered, online vehicle renewals, et cetera. And if you look at the companion graph on the bottom, which compares years, you'll see the 07 bar at the top pretty clearly indicates we've got more traffic on the site than we've had in any of the previous years. That is the essence of my report, except for the portal financials, and I'm going to pass the financial statement around to you.
I've chosen to keep this out of the report because it's fairly revealing about the internal operations of our company, and we're a little hesitant to make it a part of the report that gets emailed around to the members and the members of the public.
And we do email the GM report to all state CIOs and anyone else.
So my request is that we keep the financials of the portal for the board's consumption and refrain from passing it around to the public if we don't have to. Just a quick, and I won't belabor these numbers, the portal's very healthy financially. In April, which was the most recent financials that we have, we haven't gotten our financial statements for May yet. We did about $544,000 in top-line revenue, and after expenses, which are still pretty stable, we had $144,000 in net income after taxes for April, so a revenue share of about $48,000, which Greg's already reported to you. And at the last block of numbers here shows you the breakdown by application, how many transactions we've done in the month of April, and the dollar revenues that were derived from those applications. And I'll be glad to answer any questions about the financials or any other part of my report.
Anyone? Thanks, Dan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
The next meeting falls the day after the 4th of July. Is that a significant issue for anyone or everyone? Or Sega Room is still open that day, isn't it? Thursday?
Is there an additional day to the actual 4th, which is a Wednesday, right?
Wednesday, correct.
Oh, it's just the 4th is the state holiday, right?
I think so.
There's not another day. But for vacation purposes, it might be good out of that week.
That's the question, I guess.
Right. I guess that I would suggest if we moved it at all, it's probably just back 1 week. That condenses the next one a little bit, but obviously opens up a little bit of flexibility for that week if people are going to try to...
Well, in light of the fact that we're not able to really vote on anything this time, we probably don't want to get it out too far. And if you're planning for people to travel to that meeting, you also need to get some the further we go down the road, the worse we are for a response to that.
So you want to move it up a week? That's
you really won't have much information for the month of June.
Right.
Maybe we.
I would really ask the board to consider going a week later on an ongoing basis.
Plays the feasibility thing another
week.
You mean permanently change to the second week? What do you mean an ongoing basis?
Why?
Makes it very hard to give you accurate June or previous month information. See, if you look at the financials that you're getting, you just got
April's.
Yeah, that's a good point. Why was the first Thursday selected?
I don't know, because I wasn't part of the original meetings.
Well.
And we can do anything we want.
Is changing the meeting date permanently something that would require a full vote?
I
bet. We should at least ask the other people.
So yeah. Maybe
how about an email?
Move it back a week, and then in July at that meeting, discuss permanently.
Yeah.
But that makes good sense.
And the only conflict of that Thursday is the second Thursday of the month is the state CIO forum. That's why we didn't.
Now I remember that.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's finding dates is an incredible challenge.
Use the old IMC meeting date.
Yeah.
The Friday.
seems for July, we can live with that conflict, and then we can talk. Yeah. Maybe explore some more dates.
So we're meeting the 5th or the 12th?
12th. So take the discussion.
Okay. We will post that immediately on the website to comply with the open meetings requirements.
Actually, the 12th doesn't work for me now that I think about it.
My house?
In the neighborhood.
Throughout that whole week?
Yeah.
From the 8th.
Well, it didn't sound like anybody had conflicts here for the 5th.
Yeah, maybe we should stick with the 5th.
I've got no conflict, I just won't be here. That is the conflict.
I'm having a hard time getting my brain around that.
But feel free, I'm just telling.
How many other people can be here on the 5th? Well, that's a start.
Just poll everybody.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's do this. We'll follow up with the rest of the board members. We will plan it on the 5th right now.
Yeah, let's get some response back because I think Roxy's got a good point. Let's not let too much of this stuff stack up. And then I want to get this organized for the other business that we talked about quickly. So up a whole week and deal with these other issues and not worry about the financial stuff. But we'll leave it there. Mr. Hobson.
I see the bylaws do say first Thursday of each month. So unless there's a holiday, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. There's another out in there somewhere.
Take some phone.
Yeah, actually, we have the option to change the bylaws with a supermajority or a regular majority, which
depends
discussion.
If you want to suspend them or amend
yes,
them.
I know,
it's
I know.
A different percentage.
But the results are the same. With that, any other business? Anybody have any issues? We're adjourned.